Ireland may be a small island on the edge of a continent, but our unique mix of animals and plants gives us a fascinating natural history. This series celebrates the animals that share our island, and we meet some of the people who know them best. I'm Colin Stackage-Johnson, and this is Nature on One. This week, I ventured 11 kilometres off the Kerry coast to spend the night on the Skellig Rocks, two giant sandstone pinnacles, Skellig Beag and Skellig Michael.
It's spectacular. I mean, I didn't expect it to be so big and breathtakingly beautiful.
It's just amazing, like, to be somewhere that you know is so rare, and there are so few places like it on Earth.
I never expected that I would be so moved by the wildlife here.
Now, in about 600 AD, early Christian monks chose Skellig Michael as a location for a monastery on the edge of the known world, which they believed would bring them closer to God. But long before that, the seabirds like puffins and gannets and storm petrels and Manx shearwaters had chosen these islands as a safe breeding site. Skellig Beag is the home of the second largest gannet colony in the world, but I'm going to spend the night on Skellig Michael. From a distance, the Skelligs look barren and inhospitable, but as you approach, they start to come to life.
This is my second time in Skellig. I was last here in 1971 when I was a young fella. And I always promised myself to come back some stage with my sons, which I have. And I thought it was absolutely fantastic.
It's a very beautiful island. 23 years ago we were here also, but we couldn't make it to here because the weather was very bad. And now we're at last here. It's very beautiful.
Bob Harris has been guiding here since 1987. Bob, I was just wondering, how did you first come to Skellig?
Well, I was interested in Irish monasticism for since I was younger, since in university days, and I knew about the Skelligs, and I came out here for the first time in 1985 and was very impressed by the place, more impressed than I even thought I would be, and I knew I would be impressed. So the opportunity came to start working here when the guiding service began in 1987. So I've been here ever since. I'm sort of part of the place, or it's part of me, rather, I suppose.
It's a slightly monastic existence, isn't it?
We do stay here from May until early October, generally, but what it must have been like here to be here all year round in the 7th century in very different conditions, very different world, I'm sure we're quite different than the conditions we are used to now. What it was like when they first arrived could have been a very, very different situation. I'm sure it was very much a tenuous existence, and how they actually survived to be able to consolidate their position so that they could have a garden, so that they could go fishing down the steps, so that they could keep animals. All of that beggars belief, really. It's very hard to picture. Today we have a road, today we have a pier, today we have the steps. You have to presume that the monks had nothing when they came here, and they didn't even have an easy way to get up to the terrace where they built their monastery. They had no water. There's no spring here on the island, so they had to catch rainwater. So they were literally up here in the wilderness like the birds.
I've just climbed the 600th step to the monastery. And on either side of the steps, there's surprisingly lush green vegetation. The ground is covered by sea campion, lovely white flowers, and sea spurry, absolutely covering every bit of soil. And amongst that are just these giant sandstone slabs. And there, some 200 metres above sea level, is that iconic Skellig's view. If you've ever seen a postcard of the Skellig Islands, the one with the beehive huts and beyond Little Skellig, the Kerry coast, that's where I'm standing right now. It's absolutely spectacular. You know, the view, everything I can see from here is pretty much what the monks would have seen 1,000 years ago. Now, Skellig Beag has one of the biggest gannet colonies in the world. Gannets are our biggest seabird. They're a fabulous white bird. And at this time of year, they've got a beautiful yellow head. And they're the ones you see diving into the sea in search of fish. It must be a reflection of how rich these seas are that so many birds can survive there. They reckon right now there might be something, I don't know, more than 25,000 pairs. And each of them has a chick right now. So that's a lot of birds. That could be up to 70,000 birds roosting there at night. There are two other species of birds which only come in to land at the Skelligs under the cover of nightfall. Manx shearwaters, they're the birds that sort of, they get the name because they fly close to the waves. They're extraordinary flyers. And they have a little cousin called the storm petrel. They're a little bird about the size of the robin. Both shearwaters and storm petrels nest in burrows underground. They will incubate the egg and the chick is born and will live there fully underground until it's ready to leave the island. So tonight, just after darkness has fallen, I'm hoping to witness and record the sound of the storm petrels. And then sometime around midnight, the Manx shearwater should arrive back to the island. Catherine Merrigan is one of the OPW guides who shows people around the monastery.
As you probably know, the Manx shearwaters, you don't really see them in the daytime except for at sea. They're very beautiful birds. They're a blackbird on top and white underneath. And they fly just above the surface of the sea. They burrow deep into the earth here on the island. But in one of our beehive cells, we do have a Manx shearwater couple that come there since I've been here, actually, and they nest in one of the corners of the beehive cells. We're very protective of it. It's like our Skellig baby. So every year, it's kind of a moment when the chick comes out, it hatches, the egg hatches. So I'm always waiting, and there a couple of years ago, there was very stormy weather and no boats for many days. But every day, I'd make my way up just to see if it actually hatched. And there was nothing one day to the next and day after that. And then one day I came up and I was looking away and there I heard a little chirp, 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 thinking, oh, it had hatched. The mother just moved around and actually it was the egg that was talking away. And so it hadn't hatched at all. And it didn't hatch for 2 days, but it was chirping away a couple of times when I went up. So I just thought it was just hilarious.
Fantastic. Oh, how nice.
The singing egg.
Wow. Yeah. And it's got a beehive hut all to itself.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Little did the monks.
Very, very safe.
There are lots of different kinds of birds here. Have you got a favourite?
No, that's a tough one, but I have to say I spend a lot of time with the puffins every evening, hours, actually. I hate to say favourite, but I do love the puffins. Who wouldn't? They're just hilarious to watch and to be around. And, yeah, it's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing little creatures. But they're not all what you see because they're incredibly feisty. I have had to break up several fights during the evenings here. It's like a big brawl's going on. And if they come down as far as the road, they sometimes break their necks. So I try to break it up before they actually do reach. and they beak to beak. And they're funny little creatures. They're incredibly curious, very, very social in that they're visiting each other the whole time. And just great little birds, they really are. And tough out.
Yeah, I've sometimes noticed them, like in a colony. You can see them, and they go around. They have their own little burrow, they kind of go over it, and they go to other burrows, and they tilt their heads and look down as if they're sort of nosy neighbours or something.
As they are, very much so. They love a bit of action, any bit of movement, and then you just wonder what are they doing? But they just love a bit of action, wandering around, nosing in into each other, and incredibly social. And very, very flirtatious.
Now, way down below me here, I can see the ledges, the thin cliff ledges, are covered in razorbills and guillemots. They're so well adapted for life on these little ledges. They sit upright like little penguins, because simply there wouldn't be the room to lie down. And they say, I think, that the guillemot has the smallest territory in the bird world. It's just really a few inches of rock, and they'll defend it fiercely from the neighbours, that guy is doing right now, pecking at each other. But their feet are set so well back near their tail, that gives them this ability to sit upright. They've got to defend their territories from their neighbour, because egg laying space is valuable. Now, they lay an egg, not on a nest, but just on the bare rock itself, and it's hard to believe that they can manage to keep those eggs there for the entire incubation period, but they normally do. Now, some do fall over the cliffs, but their eggs are specially adapted. They're not so rounded like normal eggs. They're sort of pointed at one end, and that means if the egg does get knocked, it tends to sort of roll round in a little circle. And this is a special adaptation that these cliff nesting birds have to stop their eggs falling off the ledges. Now, when the chicks are just a couple of weeks old and still very small, their parents will fly down to the sea below and start to call them. And those poor little chicks, the only way they can get to the sea, they can't fly, they just have to jump. And it's an amazing sight. If you sit here long enough, you'd see it. But these little chicks just have to launch themselves off the cliff face into the sea. As I slowly make my way to the top, the numbers of puffins are building. It's now about 9 o'clock in the evening, and this is when the skelligs really come alive. The air is full of thousands of puffins, just circling and circling and circling, from the very bottom of the cliffs to the very top. All you can see are these birds. You wonder why they're doing it. They're, you know, they don't seem like they're nature's best flyers. They're sort of stumpy bodies, their wings fluttering really fast. And you just wonder, why are they using up all this energy? It just means the fishing must be great. There's no shortage of food. They know they're going to get plenty of food tomorrow. And it's some sort of socialising. And right beside me, no more than 3 feet away, is a little pair of puffins who have just landed right beside me. They are the most beautiful of birds, with their bright orange feet. Now that is the sound of a puffin. Now, right now, they still have chicks inside these burrows. This is why there are so many burrows on skelligs. These little guys are one of the main reasons. And the chicks at this time of year must be getting big. Some of them could have already left the island. It's amazing. It's such a change of environment from living in a dark little hole to then any night now. Maybe even tonight he's going to come out and make his way out to sea. Adult puffins can easily avoid the gulls, but the youngsters, many of them, don't make it. Mortality at this stage is really, really high. It seems that these guys will spend the winter out in the Atlantic. They won't return to landfall until about next April. There are normally 3 OPW guides living here over the summer. For much of the year, Eamon McClure works as a nurse in Donegal. He's known locally as Banjo Man.
Yeah, I like playing the banjo. It's definitely a wonderful pastime, the music.
It's not intrusive in any way. Another instrument might be, but something I don't know about the sea and the birds calling and the banjo, it sort of somehow all works together, huh?
Well, the neighbours don't complain. I've never heard a puffin give out about the banjo. The other guys might tell you different.
When you're not on the Skelligs, what do you do for the rest of the year?
This winter I took over the management. I became a matron of a nursing home, so that was a new thing for me. Interesting enough, quite difficult, but I enjoyed it. Just the call of the Skelligs then, coming up to the season, I resigned and came back out here to stay on the Skelligs again for another year. This is my summer job since 1999. It's a very interesting place. I love it. I really love staying here. And just enjoy the lifestyle out here, enjoy meeting the tourists. You know, if it wasn't for the tourists, we wouldn't be here. So it's part of the job, and you never know who might land on the island.
Children, but they don't run on. Mm-hmm. When climbing the steps, there are 600 steps to the top. There are no safety railings anywhere on the island, so be very careful. Look where you walk. If it does rain, they can get quite slippery. Stay away from the edge.
When all the birds are here, there's something, you probably arrive roughly the time that the birds do. And there must be something about the end of season when the birds start to leave, that sort of... everything starts to quieten down, and it's sort of time for you guys to leave then as well, that sense of the end of a season.
Yeah, the puffins, when they'll start to go in the next week or so, the island definitely is quieter. It looks more bare. You notice the other species of birds on the island, but the puffins do attract your attention. There are so many of them, and they're incredibly beautiful and fun to look at. Another part of it is when the puffins leave, the tourists get quite agitated. They have no photographs of the puffins. My father thinks I'm mad. I come south for the summer. Instead, like the birds, I live in Donegal in the wintertime. He reckons I should do it the other way around, you know, but the Skelligs is here, and it's definitely an annual migration up and down.
Right now, out to sea, Manx shearwaters are gathering in these vast rafts. They're waiting to fly in here in the dead of night. The reason they do that is that they want to avoid the gulls. They are extremely poor on land. Their legs are sort of so far back in their bodies that they clamber around the place and move very unsteadily. And if they were to come in by day, the gulls would just pick them up one after the other. So they wait until the dead of night, until they return to their burrows to feed the chicks that are waiting patiently underground. Now, storm petrels, on the other hand, relatives of the shearwaters, but tiny little birds, they're only about the size of a robin. They are going to come in possibly a little sooner. They have been fluttering around on the ocean wave all day long, not in flocks like the shearwaters. They tend to operate as individuals, but come nightfall, the atmosphere in this place is going to change completely. Now, back at the monastery, and it's almost fully dark. I can just about make out the silhouette of Skellabjug. When the monks were here 1,000 years ago, the sounds are probably very similar to what I'm hearing now. The sea is completely flat, and the only sound I can hear are the storm petrels calling to welcome their partners home. This is one of the great wildlife spectacles of Ireland, and one I guess that few people get to witness, but it's a real privilege to be here. Listening to the calls that those monks, the people who built these extraordinary structures, listening to very much the same sounds that they would have heard 1,000 years ago on a fine, calm summer's night. And from where I'm sitting now, I can now see dozens of these little birds flying in the air, and people have estimated that there are probably 100,000 breeding pairs of storm petrels on this island. Seems hard to believe, but when you see the work the monks did by making all these little walls and staircases and beehives, a storm petrel couldn't ask for a better breeding place. So when the adults leave here in a few weeks' time, they will migrate to the coast off South Africa, and that's where they'll spend the winter before returning to the very self-same nesting spot, maybe next April. It's an extraordinary journey, really. It's about 10,000 miles each way. For a little bird about the size of a robin that just lives in the open ocean all that time, it's just remarkable how such a little thing can survive. Hard to imagine them in the middle of an Atlantic storm in winter. Ireland has the largest population of these birds in the world. It's if we were to pick a bird to symbolise Ireland, it really should be the storm petrel. Sandra O'Connor runs Valentia Island Sea Sport, and she's the one woman I know in Ireland who happily swims with jellyfish. And she's been diving around the Skelligs for 25 years.
They come from all over to dive the Skelligs. It is noted as one of the top dive sites everyone wants to tick off, like the Great Barrier Reef and all that. We get loads of photographers and divers that come from, we've had them from Italy, from all over Europe. National Geographic spent 3 months over here photographing underwater Skelligs and the local area. So yeah, anyone that's serious about their diving, they all want to come and dive the Skelligs.
No, I've been out to Skelligs a few times, but I've only seen what it's like above water. But what happens when you dip below the surface?
You don't realise how colourful it is. You know, you look at a rock even at the tidefall and it just looks brown and black marks. But once you get down, it's just amazingly colourful that you don't realise the amount of colour that there's a kaleidoscope of colour there because of all the different jewel anemones. And it's like someone has come along and done the most amazing spray painting on a wall, teeny tiny little jewel anemones, and they're like purple in the middle and then orange and then pink tips, and there's just huge banks of them. And then you go down a little bit further and you have, you know, kelp, and you know when you see seaweed on the strand, it's just like seaweed, and you try and avoid it, but it's like it comes to life down there. It's kind of like 3D. It comes to life and it's swaying all over the place, and it's the most beautiful brown. You feel like touching, it's like velvet, or even like jellyfish that you try and avoid when you're swimming, and they're like pulsing with the sun going through them, and you just stand back and you kind of get mesmerised by them. Whereas if you see them on a beach, you just ignore them or avoid them. You're just gliding along and all you can hear are the bubbles, you know, and it's just really relaxing and colourful. And then of course you have the fish life. There's loads of pollock and wrasse and beautiful rainbow coloured cuckoo wrasse, if you've seen them. They're really, really colourful, orange and blue and bright kind of blues and greys. You get the seals come along. We have colonies of baby seals, and they'll come and they'll nip at your fins, and you got to hang back and let them get used to you. And then if you're lucky, they'll come playing, they'll nip at your fins. They like the colourful fins, and they'll blow bubbles in your face. But then you just have to let them come to you, because if Big Mama thinks you're interfering with her pups, she'll swing by and get you her jet stream to blow you out of the place. Basking sharks are a regular feature on these waters in the summer, and they're amazing enough when you see them on the surface and their gills are wide open, and they just, if you stop the boat, they just glide past you, you know, and the gills are wide open. But when you're diving and you see them, they just like move past you silently like a freight train, and the gills are wide open, and it does go through your brain, okay, they're vegetarians, they're not going to come near me, you know. But they're amazing to see, yeah. And I've seen an orca. It's been quite a few years, but we're taking a group of divers to the Skelligs, and I was in the rib, and I was kind of wandering away, and I saw these three, what I thought were sails. The visibility wasn't very good that day, and I was kind of, what the hell are windsurfers doing out here 4 miles from the thing? They're not windsurfers, so of course I had to have a look, and three orcas came flying past, and it was their dorsal fin, I thought was a windsurfer sail, and they came flying by, and we were in a fairly fast rib, but once they realised we were there, they put the speed on, we could hardly keep up with them, and then one of them reached, jumped them right beside the boat. Amazing.
I've just heard my first shearwater. If you didn't know what that was, it could be a pretty frightening sound. They're quite easy to see by day. When you're even coming out of the Skelligs, you come across lots of them, rafts of them. But you hear this call, they will only call like that over land when they return into the nest. And it's their way of finding each other. And now it's disconcerting enough walking around with the storm petrels, but they're just little birds the size of a robin. And if they fly into you, well, they just sort of glance against you. However, a shearwater is something quite different. Now halfway down the steps, and this seems to be where the height of shearwater activity is. There's a steep bank right beside me, full of little holes that go in amongst the sea campion, and this is where the shearwaters are trying to find each other. Parents are calling from the burrow, other ones flying overhead. It's some cacophony of sound, just remarkable.
It sort of gave me tingles. Been to a couple of places in the world that gave me that feeling, and this is definitely one of those places.
The monks were probably nuts. You have to be nuts to come over here and drag a board up a rock and carve out steps up the side of another big rock. Well, there were different times. But fantastic place.
The isolation of Skellig Michael must have tested the monks who lived here for five centuries. And I'm sure the hundreds of thousands of birds that arrived each year were a welcome distraction from that solitude. As the birds and tourists depart for the winter, a silence will envelop these islands. That's hard to imagine right now as I leave with the chorus of birds ringing in my ears. But what a privilege it's been to spend a night in this magical place.